2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Wake up!
The games are over, and it's time for our guys to break it all down. After all, it's Sunday. What else do you have to do?
Nothing.
This is your Morning After podcast with Hans and Scotty and Lloyd Cole on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Another edition of your Morning After podcast. Hansels and Scott Girard, Lloyd Cole, a lot to break down, some big wins, and everything lined up for the University of Utah. They needed three things to happen. Well, four things if you can count their own win against Stanford. And they knocked them all out, including a really crazy game with Oregon State beating Oregon and then Washington beating Wazoo late last night. And just like that, the University of Utah is back in the Pac-12 championship game. Just when you thought they were done, they were dead. Nope, they're back in it with a chance to go to the Rose Bowl with a matchup against USC. So, Hans, just how crazy was it last night watching those scores come across the wire and seeing exactly what was playing out?
I was thinking, Viva Las Vegas. Viva. I'm not excited to go to Vegas. I'm excited to go back to a championship game because these games are high energy. They're in a really nice, it's a cool environment, that Allegiant Stadium. It's a really great environment. I'm sure USC and Utah fans are going to pack in. It's going to be an incredible Friday night, like one of those that you always remember. I watched every one of these games and just sat there and blinked thinking, how is this happening? There, it's all falling into place. UCLA had to come back and beat Cal. Cal had them.
Yep.
Oregon State, you kept scratching your head. Oregon gets a 31-10 lead, I think, in the third quarter, something like that. And Oregon State makes a push back to come and get that game. Utah just took care of business. You knew that one was going to happen. And then I'm sure Utah fans over the years have got this feeling like, yeah, the one thing that we need to happen won't happen. And I kind of went into that Washington State game thinking that, like, oh, yeah, this is where Washington State wins and upsets the whole apple cart. No, that didn't happen. It was amazing to watch it all fall into place.
Lloyd, I didn't even think this was a realistic possibility until after that game against Oregon. I thought, okay, there's mathematically it's not even possible. And then the Pac-12 released, nope, it can happen, and this is how it can happen. And I thought, you know, when we saw it, we're like, okay, well, that's a stretch, but it's not a huge stretch. And frankly, it's all going to come down to Oregon State. And the Beavers, man, they are just a team that is so sound and does a lot of things really well. Frankly, they're really good at 21 positions, and one they kind of struggle in a little bit at quarterback. But
I've heard that somewhere. I saw that somewhere.
But other than that, I mean, look, that's a good team, and sure enough, Oregon. That's all Oregon had to do. Oregon didn't need all this other stuff to happen. All Oregon had to do was just beat Oregon State. All they had to do was go to Corvallis, which is not a huge dominating stadium with a huge crowd support and really nasty place to play. It's Corvallis, Oregon. Oregon should be able to go in there and beat Oregon State, but yet they couldn't do it. They gave up the big lead, as Hans mentioned, in the late touchdown drive. And just like that, man, Utah's back in it.
And well, they needed all these things that you saw, all these things they had to have happen. And it was like when you started looking at it a little bit closer, you're like, okay, that's not that far fetched, because you have an Oregon team with an injury. If Bo Nix is healthy, there's no way. I don't even care if it's the Civil War and weird things happen. Like
Bo Nix. Did you see Bo Nix try to keep and carry on that fourth down?
Yep. And guess what? And because they thought nobody was gonna sniff that out, because Bo Nix hasn't ran at all for the most part, and they sniffed it out, and he couldn't move anyways.
No, he was turtle slow off the edge.
Oh yeah,
he made a tackle for a loss.
He wasn't Bo Nix, and if Bo Nix was the Bo Nix that we've seen all this year that we thought was eventually going to disappear, then you know, the fact is, like, just it was very there, right there in the grasp of for Utah. It was all very doable. The you know, but as soon as they went down, as soon as Oregon went down or got up on Oregon State, I thought to myself, okay. So this is how it was supposed to go. You even have an injured Bo Nix, and this team's going to blow this team out of the water. And then weird things just started happening. It was like, and that game got weird, like bananas crazy. I'm talking the special teams. You had a dropped a punt. They got dropped. You had a special teams gaff where the guy essentially looked like he was calling a fair catch or whatever, where all of a sudden it bounces on at like the 1 yard line. And he's like, you know what? I think I'm going to refill this. And you're like, what is happening? Everything went Oregon State. Everything. I shouldn't even say went Oregon State's way. Everything went Utah's way.
Yeah.
It was one of those days where, and then that Apple Cup last night was just a back and forth battle that Washington couldn't get a stop against Wazoo. It was, you know, and finally when they did, and it was like, they kept stepping on their own toe. They had an interception. They had a fumble. Like, it was like, okay, which, you know, you didn't know which way that was going to go. But man, that was what college football is all about. By the way, that was a fun Saturday to track.
Well, and the one thing that we out of everything that had to happen for the University of Utah, the one thing that you were concerned about the least was actually the University of Utah. Because out of those four things that had to go Utah's way, them beating Colorado was obviously number one. And that was the one that you were concerned about the least, because Colorado is just horrible. And sure enough, Utah led 42-0 at the half, hands en route to a blowout victory. And again, Colorado's going to hire a new coach. And there's a lot of reports that they're throwing everything they can at Deion Sanders, which would make Pac-12 Media Day a little bit more interesting. But
sure.
I don't know if that happens. That certainly provides a little bit of life to not only Colorado, but to the Pac-12 overall. I'll believe it when I see it, but that Colorado team, Hans, and you tweeted this out last night, there's not a lot of college football teams that you see worse right now, G5 or P5, than Colorado. That's just a miserably bad team.
It's probably historically bad for the Pac-12. I can't imagine there's ever been a worse team in the Pac-12 than this. And I know that they put up 21 points in the second half, but Utah really called off the dogs. As you mentioned, 42-0 at the half. Colorado had a total of 18 yards at the half. They were 0-8 on third down conversions, 0-1 on fourth down conversions. They were minus 10 rushing. And they were, whatever it is to get you to 18 total yards, 22 or something like that, or 28 yards passing. It was horrible. They had given up 370 offensive yards at the half. And we went through the numbers. I did in the pregame, and I know that I think the Utah preview game, our preview show we did on Thursday, I went through all the numbers of Colorado. This is a historically bad team. And it showed, and I actually feel bad about it because I want Colorado good. The Buffalo brand is still a very valuable, buildable brand if somebody can come in and get a hold of it. And if they do get the backing by their athletic department and their boosters, and people start to reinvest and fans jump back in the stands and that get out and start recruiting, they can rebuild that program. I truly believe that. So it was really difficult to watch Colorado play at that level, but good to see Utah. And I'm hoping Yasmin comes back. Only one catch last night, nice. But it was such an electric catch for him. Jaquinn Jackson showed that he's got a future at that running back position. I know it's against Colorado, but we've got enough sample size that if you give him a camp, give him a spring ball, give him a camp, I think Jaquinn could be a very special running back in this league and for the University of Utah. I thought that Cam Rising started to pick things up a little bit, started slow, but picked things up a little bit and really started rolling. That Utah offensive line, Jim Harding, I think deserves the coaching MVP for the year with some of the moves that he made, taking his interiors, putting them both out at the tackle positions, and finding guys like Mokofisi and Beals and Maya and some others to fill in the middle. I think he gets the coaching certificate of the year. It was a really nice, complete package. Defense started giving some things up, but remember, no Clark Phillips in this game.
Yeah.
He was there and he was dressed, but he did not play. And no Jonah Ellis in this game. So hopefully Clark Phillips is ready and available for the Pac-12 championship game. Hopefully the same for Jonah Ellis. And these guys can have a full complement. They're going to be really, really tough to beat.
Was that an injury thing with Phillips?
I didn't get the bottom of it. I'm just curious,
or was that a sitting out because I'm about to go to the NFL type thing? And if that's the case, is he even going to play in the Pac-12 championship?
I got to imagine you want tape against USC.
Yeah, I would think so.
In fact, if he is healthy and available, you just don't miss that game.
No.
An opportunity to grab another championship, two championships on your way out the door to the NFL. Be really nice look for Clark.
Yeah. I had a couple things for you, Hans, on this game. Because what was it? I mean, the defense was swarming. Why? It was kind of weird looking at the stat that they only had one sack. Isn't that kind of strange? I thought it was strange, weird.
But it was, I think it was kind of a Colorado goal to get the ball out of the hand, to really try to run as much as they could. You know, I know they only ended up with whatever it was, close to 30 carries. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I think that they just had a plan of getting it out of this freshman's hand because they didn't want this Maddox cop to get hit, to get smoked, get beat up and injured for the year. You know, this was his first and only game that he played in all year long. This is it. And so I think they went into it, Lloyd, and they were like, we're going to get it out of your hand. We're going to leave in max protect. We're going to try to run it, burn clock. We know how this is going to play out. We don't want to break this kid, so let's put in a game plan to get it out of his hand and keep him safe.
Well, I think this was a great game for Cam Rising as far as especially confidence. Yeah, I mean, you fine, whatever, it's Colorado, I get it. They're not very good. They're 1-11. But like to go 17 of 19, I mean, the guy wasn't going 17 of 19 against SUU. So to see him do that against Colorado is you know, that I think that's good, and that gives some confidence going into that Pac-12 championship game.
It was nice though. One throw, one of the two incompletions of the night was an overthrow to Dalton Kincaid at the very beginning of that game. Kincaid had a beautiful crossing route coming all the way across the field, and it was nice and open, and he overthrew it, and I thought, man, come on. And then he really started to crank in the accuracy. So that was really nice to see. And then the other thing that was nice to see, when he finally did get out of the pocket and he's still not feeling like getting out of the pocket and really trying to bust things with his feet, but he did get out of the pocket one time, I believe off of a zone keep, if I remember right, Lloyd, and had probably a 15-yard gain on it. But yes, he is coming along, and he should be as close to healthy for the Pac-12 championship game as you could expect.
So there's that game will be obviously coming up next week, a rematch against USC. I know USC will have that game. They'll be fired up for a chance to avenge, because to strengthen their resume, this couldn't have gone much better for USC either, because USC's one loss was to Utah. And when you're trying to get in the college football playoff, you're going to have that's that committee's going to be looking at, okay, well, you lost to Utah. If they beat Utah, then that certainly kind of wipes that slate clean a little bit. Said, okay, yeah, they got us in Salt Lake, but when we played in, when it really mattered for a championship game, we beat them. And I'm sure USC's going to want to not just beat them, but beat them badly so that they can show, look, no, we're good. We had one off day, and then when we played them again, we took care of business. So USC is going to be highly motivated for this game, certainly because of their chance to get into the playoff. I'm sure that the Pac-12 definitely wants USC to win this game. And so, yeah, the Utes will have a lot working against them in this one. But any chance you have to go back to the Rose Bowl, say back-to-back conference champions, I mean, you can't ask for much more for the University of Utah, Lloyd. This is something that I know that they're certainly excited about, and deservedly so, because none of us thought this was going to happen after that Oregon game.
No, it didn't seem that way. And this to have Utah be in this position, and I mean, people want to get hung up on the, oh, they backed their way to, who cares? Like, they took care of business. They did what they needed to do. Like, guess what? That year that Utah, all they had to do was beat Colorado. They needed a bunch of things to go their way to get into the Pac-12 championship game again, and it didn't go their way. And guess what? Somebody else backed their way in. So what? And for a chance to get back to the Rose Bowl, that's, you know, props to Kyle Whittingham and this team. I mean, there's some rough losses. You know, the loss to Florida is going to be one that stings all year, and that loss to Oregon is definitely one, because with an injured Bo Nix, that was a very winnable team, you know, winnable game. But it doesn't matter. Guess what? In the end, they got to the same exact place they were going to try to get to anyways.
A couple of things that I want Utah fans to think about, and we had to go through this last night. I did a little bit of homework to try to figure this thing out. So it's not that complicated, but Utah does have to win to get to the Rose Bowl. Yeah. They've got to beat USC. If they lose to USC, then USC will go to the college football playoffs, probably, and Washington would be the second highest ranked Pac-12 team and would probably get that bid to the Rose Bowl. So USC does need to win to get back to the Rose Bowl, but I think they're very capable, as we saw on the regular season. And I think you're right, Scotty. I think that USC is going to be dogging out. And I think Caleb Williams is different than he was even when Utah played him.
Yeah.
But I think Utah's got a better bead defensively. I think they've gotten some identity even since they beat USC. This defense has really come together. That you have to have Clark Phillips, because if you got Zamaya Vaughn and Phillips, and you've got this defensive backfield that has been healthy outside of Clark Phillips missing this last game, this is a really good backfield. RJ Hubert has come back. He's gotten healthy, and he's been spectacular. Sione Vaki, the young safety, has been incredible. Lander Barton has learned a lot from the first time they beat USC to this point. Zamaya Vaughn has been one of your more consistent outside presences. Let's see, who else am I missing? Isbell. Isbell has surfaced as another big hitting safety that is making a difference. And then you throw Clark Phillips in there, guys. It's a really good defensive backfield that I think can handle what Caleb Williams is going to bring.
So we'll have complete coverage of that one. Before we get to I guess we can transition to the BYU game based on the news alone, but some news out of the Pac-12. David Shaw steps down after Stanford loses to BYU. David Shaw is now done at Stanford, said it's his own decision, said he prayed about it, said it just felt like that it was time, that he'd spent 16 years there at Stanford, 12 as head coach, and that he just felt it was time to step down, does not anticipate getting another job. I know that there are many, many media jobs available for him. He does a great job on the NFL Network and their draft coverage, so I'm sure there'll be a lot of people that will networks that will roll out the red carpet for him and pay him a ton of money to go work on the media side, and maybe that's what he wants to do. But Stanford's looking for a new job. A name that Arizona State just hired, that was the only reason I remember him, and I talked to some people at Utah State last night about it, but I remember when Utah State, after Gary Anderson left, that they that there was a name popping up. He was super young. Well, he still is super young, but was super young at the time. Kenny Dillingham is his name, and he just got the Arizona State job. Utah State, he flirted with the Utah State job. He was only, I want to say, 31 years old when Utah State came calling, and for whatever reason, that job didn't, it didn't happen with him coming to Utah State. But now he's 33, 34 years old, and he's the head coach at Arizona State. But he is highly, highly thought of. But again, crazy young. But so Arizona State's got their guy. And now, so you just have Colorado and Stanford looking for new head coaches. But BYU, it got a little bit more interesting than I think people would have liked, Hans. But overall, BYU did what we all expected them to do and go to Palo Alto and get a win against a miserable Stanford team who now finishes the year at 3-9.
Such a bad team. And I'm actually really impressed by David Shaw and his awareness. Because it, maybe he was pressed out. Maybe he was told, all right, we don't want to fire you. We don't want to be known as somebody who fires people. But I am glad that David Shaw is moving on because I think Stanford needs to heal. And I think the right coaches we saw, as you mentioned with Jim Harbaugh, can make a difference. And I actually think that they've got a lot of really good talent. We know some of the talent that's there. And so they've got a potential to do some really good things if they get the right coach in there that maybe comes back to the Stanford essentials. But as you mentioned, BYU did just enough. They actually started things off really strong. They gave up 14 points in the fourth quarter, which I'm sure they're unhappy about. They were blanked out in the third quarter offensively, which I'm sure they're unhappy about. But they were able to go out and get a few things done. I don't know exactly what's happened to Jaren Hall, but it didn't look good when he came off the field. And I know that that affected some of their ability to score and really continue to push the ball. I'm a little bit worried about Jaren, just the way he limped off. He got into a scramble and got into a pretty big pile and got turned up. And Jacob Conover came in to take things over for a minute. Jaren Hall was 7-11 for 93 yards through the air and two touchdowns against Stanford. So that is not the performance that you're looking for from Jaren Hall. I get it, all the surrounding things that happened, probably a big reason for that, but I'm a little bit worried about him. And I would say, guys, that if he is even just a little bit injured, probably not going to see him in the bowl game.
Yeah, and it's going to be a meaningless bowl game, Lloyd. I mean, let's be honest. It'll be Albuquerque, Hawaii, you know, that kind of game, hopefully better than Shreveport, but something that isn't going to move the meter at all. BYU doesn't have anything to play for. That young man's got a bright future ahead of him. I can't imagine he plays in that game.
No, I don't think so either. And I just, I think, I mean, I don't know. We kind of started talking about this a little bit last week, where is, you know, Jaren Hall's stock now? You know, early in the year, it was, okay, this guy's gone. He's not going to be here. This guy's going to be a fairly high pick. And now, you know, you have another game like this where it's not another great game. And so now,
plus the injuries aren't good, man.
Yeah, the injuries aren't good. So I don't know. You put in the injuries, and you don't want to risk more injuries in the next college football season. But I don't know. The tape's great. I mean, what do you think now? Where are you guys feeling that Jaren Hall is going to be? Is he going to be back with BYU, or is he just got to make a run for it? Because one, he's struggling to stay healthy, and in the college football season.
I think I think Cam Rising and Jaren Hall are both, they might be leaning one way, but I don't think that they've put their decision on a gold tablet yet. I don't think. I personally feel like both could come back and both could probably gain advantage from doing so.
Yeah.
Scotty?
I think, yeah, absolutely. I think there could be advantages. Jaren Hall's got that, got the one thing working against him where he's old, you know, and I know that there's going to be pressures coming from not his family and not him, but they'll probably be the NFL say, hey, look, man, you're what, 24 years old? You really want to be a rookie at 25? That's not highly looked upon by an NFL team, willing to use a, you know, first, second, third round pick, which I think Jaren Hall has the capability of being. But at this point, you know, it's tough because the injuries start piling up and you want to play a healthy season, but can you guarantee you're going to play a healthy season if you come back next year? The chances of that are pretty unlikely. Jaren Hall takes a beating out there. So I think, and this is me just speculating, I think Cam Rising comes back. I think Jaren Hall leaves. But I don't think either one of them made their mind up. To me, I don't even know why Cam Rising's even flirting with it. It's a no-brainer that Cam Rising should be coming back. But Jaren Hall, I understand the thought process of leaving, and I know there's already kind of some jokes and some rumors out there that Tanner McKee will be your starting quarterback at BYU next year, because a lot Stanford's probably just going to get, especially with the David Shaw news, is just going to get just destroyed in the transfer portal with David Shaw leaving. So I don't know. That's my thought. I think Jaren Hall leaves. I think Cam Rising comes back, but obviously could certainly be wrong. And I'd love to see both of them back for their respective teams next year.
By the way, you know who's the big winner in this David Shaw resigning thing? The state of Utah.
Yeah,
that guy can get out of all the room, you know, the houses, the living rooms of all these high school kids in Utah, and stop stealing some of the great talent that's in Utah. Like, that's who the big winner is today.
He did recruit well here.
Yeah, he did, and the thing is, he'd let you know about it at the Pac-12 media day every year.
I hope Jaren's okay, and I hope that he plays in the bowl game, and I hope we continue to see him get better, because I do really believe in Jaren. And I know that we're going to have plenty of time to break down Cam Rising and Jaren Hall's performances through the season, but neither one of them hit the expectations that I had for them. I think a lot of that had to do with what their bodies went through, but every quarterback has body issues that they go through. And I personally want to see them both back.
Yeah. Do you think we see both back? And again, just asking you to speculate here.
100% speculation. I think we see them both back.
Interesting. Well, that'd be great for great. I mean, honestly, if you're BYU and you get Jaren Hall back in a year, you're transitioning into the Big 12. That is a huge, huge sigh of relief for Aaron Roderick and that offense.
Yeah, with all this talent that's leaving, it'd be very helpful.
Yeah.
And Utah would immediately be, I would imagine, a top 15 team again to start the year.
Yeah, I'd put them up there again, because I got to imagine Keithy's going to come back. I would hope that if Cam Rising comes back, that Yasmin comes back. And for people that haven't heard us talking about this, it's just different now with name, image, and likeness. These quarterbacks are making good enough money that it's enticing enough to stick around for them. If they don't get the proper draft grade, guys, Scotty, you've been doing this for years. I'll reach out to the two scouts that I know, but neither one of these guys are draftable after this year.
I don't think so.
I'll tell you who is. Quarterback. Kincaid is draftable. My gosh. If that guy goes past the second round, if he's like, say, third, fourth round, that's a steal, I think, right now, considering how well he's playing.
He's very draftable and has been very special all year. But
Props to you, by the way. You said it long ago. You said, watch out for this Kincaid guy. When he was first there, you said, watch out for this guy.
I can tell you that the coaches raved about him, even though he wasn't getting the play time that a lot of people had hoped. People were just raving about him. So he's always had their eye. But Yasmin, I think, has the potential to be in that pocket. He's an inch taller. He's 15 pounds heavier. And I want to see him come back and get the usage. But that tight end room could be completely depleted. you could see Keithy go. You could see Kincaid go. You could see Yasmin go. And you could see Logan Kendall go. All four could go.
Not the Rhino.
Don't
put that out there.
Shut your mouth.
The Rhino's gone, brothers. The Rhino's gone. And an NFL team really does need to take a look at that blocking maniac.
Yeah. Well, there is a guy that'll be in the portal coming up from Provo that could be available to help out that tight end room.
Yeah, and I think he will.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
I don't think that's breaking news. I think a lot of people kind of assumed that's the direction that was going. I mean, dun, dun. Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, you go back to the years of, you know, Wesley Tonga and Jake Murphy. I mean, Utah seemed to be a place where good tight ends went to die. And now, and now look at it. I mean, now it's tight end you for crying out loud. I mean, it's just, they've figured it out how to get them part of the offense, and those tight ends are shining right now. I didn't come out right. Anyway. All right. By the way, that Utah State game, I know that was a couple days ago, but just to talk about it just for a second. Utah State's 11 yards away. It's 2nd and 6 from taking the lead in that game with about a minute and a half left, unable to punch it in, unable to get the first down, an interception on 4th down, and then everybody sells out against the dive. The quarterback goes for 91 yards, and then a pick six after. I know that game ended at a 42-23 game, but Utah State had a chance with about 90 seconds left, Hans, to take that lead and try to get the first win for Utah State in Boise since 1996, since Hans was at Weezer High School. And they just couldn't get it done, man. It was right there for the taking, and offensively. And we talked about how good Boise State is in the red zone defensively, you know, before the BYU game. But Utah State needed to make a play or two in that red zone and just couldn't get it done. After being down 21-0, you're down 28-23 and had every opportunity and just couldn't get it done.
Well, and then Boise State tacked on some late scores that really padded it to make it look 42-23, but it wasn't 42-23. It was much closer than that. And I'm sure frustrating for the Utah State fan base. It was frustrating for me because I really thought that Utah State could beat Boise State. I thought they had, because I was not impressed when I watched Boise State against BYU. And I thought Utah State was starting to put some sauce on the field. I felt like Cooper DeGaulle was starting to play better. And it wasn't, in my opinion, it wasn't Cooper DeGaulle's best. I know that he broke the 300-yard mark, but Scotty, I didn't feel like it was Cooper DeGaulle's best.
No. There were some struggles in that game, and I know that he brought him back and stuff, but there were, you know, the two interceptions late were rough. He was just a lot of indecisive play, late on his throws. But you know, he's a gamer, and he got him back in the game for sure. I think there was that defense, which was really put together with duct tape and baling twine. They had true freshmen out there that were playing because of the injuries that they're dealing with. They gave up some big plays early in the first quarter, and then they kind of got it dialed in. And so that team fought like crazy, crazy undermanned in that game. They have now, there's only three players on that defense that has started every game this year. And from their starters that have missed games from the start of the season, they've had 72 missed games from starters this year defensively due to injury. And you're getting down to you blew through the one deep and then the two deep and then the three deep. And now you're pulling guys that are true freshmen off the field. There were three players that got their first meaningful plays in their career in that game against Boise State defensively. And so, and it showed at times, but you know, they buckled down and played well, but Utah State finishes 6-6. They'll go to a bowl game. And they'll wrap up the season with a chance to get to a winning record. I think, you know, they're probably looking at the same bowls that BYU's looking at: Hawaii, Potato, Albuquerque, the Frisco Bowl. There's one in Dallas, the First Responders Bowl. I think those are the bowl games you're looking at for Utah State. But crazy. You know, honestly, and I know people kind of scoff when I say this, I think Blake Anderson, this was more of a difficult job coaching this year than it was last year. I think the 6 wins he got out of this team this year are actually more impressive, considering with the adversity they faced, than what they had last year.
Some solid wins there at the back end, and great job getting bowl eligible. I actually have to run, guys, and before I run, I just wanted to give a shout-out to Weber State. They got their win in the first round of the FCS championships over North Dakota, Fighting Hawks, and they did it with 330 yards on the ground.
Woo.
Two guys going over 120 yards. Both Josh Davis and Damon Bankston went for over 120 yards and a combined 4 touchdowns on the ground. Really impressive on the ground. Great win by Weber State. And fellas, as always, thanks for having me on this morning.
Tell Amanda hi for me.
We will. For
have
sure.
A great Sunday, buddy.
Love you both.
Back at you. There you go. Your morning after podcast. Hans Olsen.
Hey, real quick. Hold on. Do yourselves a favor. Get out there. Subscribe if you need to. If you haven't rated the show yet, rate the show. Give us a review. We would greatly appreciate it at Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, wherever you get your podcast. Get on there. And give us a rating. It really helps the show. Goes a really long ways. It allows us to keep giving you this mediocre content. But hey, we like to do it. So please do it. We appreciate you.
I wasn't sure if it was Amanda or Jessica who came in and said something, because I could hear somebody talking in the background. I think we all found out very quickly that it was Amanda.
Yes. And when Mama says it's time to go, it's time to go.
Mama says wrap up. It's time to wrap up the podcast.
That's right.
There you go. Hans Olsen, Scott Gerard, Lloyd Cole. Enjoy your Sunday. Back with you tomorrow at high noon. The show from noon to 3. Hans and Scotty right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.